This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
What We Spend is a new podcast that explores something we almost never talk about. Every week, you'll hear a different guest share everything they spend their money on. What We Spend is available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, Binkley, Logan Webber, Drew Nixon, Cody Gold, off to see a wedding of Nick Schwartz in California. Good morning, Logan.
Good morning. Let's hope that those guys are staying up to date with their sunscreens.
It gets pretty
couple
bad.
A couple of pale individuals, I have to say, Cody and Alex both. So, got to hope that they're not just absolute red, scorched earth right now.
Who gets more tanned and burnt? Let's say who gets more burnt, Alex or Cody. I could see Alex
who
getting
gets more
really
burnt.
Alex goes to the pool a lot. Really? I know Alex goes to the pool all the time.
Good on him, just as long as he's got that SPF 500 on.
That's right. Fun show today. The Royals keep winning. We'll talk a lot about that. Kyle Larson of NASCAR. By the way, he's got two wins this year. One of the top racers in NASCAR. He's throwing out the first pitch
today. Let's go, Bink. Let's go.
That's right. That's right. Drew and I will geek out on that. He's throwing out the first pitch at Kauffman Stadium. He'll be joining us at 11. Logan, get all your NASCAR questions in.
I'll do my best. I have to say, we were talking about it in the bullpen before the show. I used to be big into NASCAR when I was a kid. My parents liked NASCAR a lot with my aunt and uncle. They would go to races all the time. I'm not sure I've watched a NASCAR race. I mean, even a partial NASCAR race since probably Jeff Gordon retired.
I actually love it. And the funny thing about Jeff Gordon is I used to come in here for Bob Edwards all the time down at The Rock. He'd come down and he'd go on with The Rock. And I remember somebody was opening the door one day, turned around and said, not, and looked back. It was Jeff Gordon. He was like the nicest guy in the world. I was like, hey, man, I can't believe that Jeff Gordon just did that. But anyway, it's fun. I love NASCAR. It's one of those things. And hopefully, you know, now that you're back here, and I know you're from here, but you're back here, you'll go out to Kansas Speedway at some point because it's one of those sports. We've talked about that. Like I told you, okay, NHL is much different. Like if you go to hockey and actually go to the game, mm-hmm. You're like, man, I'm hooked on this. I love it a lot. I think NASCAR is the same way. I think you can enjoy it from many different angles, from the infield, from the press box or the stands, wherever you want to, you can enjoy it. They make it really fan friendly as far as the event. They do a great job with it.
Oh, they do. It's so much fun. I mean, I can remember, like I said, we used to watch a lot of NASCAR when I was younger. We'd watch it on TV, but we would go to races. Like they would go to the Nationwide Series in Newton, Iowa. We would go up there all the time and like stay with my grandma and we would go to the races there. And we went to Kansas Speedway a few different times. I've never been to an actual NASCAR event. We always just went to Nationwide events. So, I'd like to go to a NASCAR. I mean, because they do such a great job with the Nationwide stuff. I can't imagine what a NASCAR race looks like. It's got to be tenfold from what they do. We used to go down, right? You'd go down and they would have all these different things, the vendors and things that you could have. And I can remember they would have like these little games that you could play as a kid where they'd give you, it was basically just like an old like Atari controller was how I would describe it, or a Nintendo 64 controller. And you could control a race car that would go around a much smaller, you know, condensed track. But we used to play that game all the time when I was a kid, when my parents would take us to the races. I just haven't been invested in NASCAR for quite a long time. Maybe being back in the Metro will do that.
It's a hidden gem in this town. I'm fired up.
It's a hidden gem in this town. Two races, you get the one, the playoff race too, that you have in the fall, but it's kind of a hidden gem. I mean, I'm lucky Kansas City like has this event. I think it's good for the area. It's fun. Drew lives out by it because that's where he decided he would live, by NASCAR.
Well, last year in this race a year ago, we saw the closest finish in NASCAR history. You know, everybody talks about the Atlanta race and how it was a 3-wide finish at the line, but this is the closest finish that we've ever seen here at this speedway. Of all the ones, Daytona, Talladega, all the close tracks, Darlington, Kansas Speedway has the closest finish. So
and
I think
you
it's something
see
you can take your pride in, you know?
The tractor trailers pulling in.
Oh, Bink, I saw as I was driving to the track, or as I was driving into work today, I saw the 7 car, Justin Haley of Spire Motorsports. They were pulling the hauler through. People already camping out yesterday. Yeah, it's one of the, for some reason, it feels like Kansas always delivers well with the crowds with NASCAR because people come down from Iowa. They come over from Missouri. They got Kansas, of course, you know.
Come down from Omaha as well. It's sort of this centrally located spot.
Yeah, it's a really good spot to have a high quality race where with the car that they have, and we might get into this with Kyle as well.
What's
11,
one thing you want to know from Kyle?
Well, one of the questions that I think
just like, what do you want to know?
Like random things. Song that gets them hyped up. One song he needs to get locked in, got the headphones on before the anthem, before the, you know, the call to get in the car, start your engines and everything.
What if he didn't listen to the music?
What helps get you locked in? Well, okay, well then what helps you get locked in? Like where what gets you from the place of pre-race festivities to, all right, I'm about to go drive this machine that is incredibly fast, incredibly complex. What gets you locked into that where you're in that zone to go out and get another top 10, another top 5, go out and win a race like he did last year in the spring race?
The one thing I'm always kind of curious about, like their week in life, like PGA players, we know they hop on that plane, they go play golf. That's just them going in their caddy and their clubs, you know, various bags and everything they bring. But NASCAR, you know, they go home very briefly because then they got to go in. Like all these drivers are doing things around the area with their sponsors. You know, if they're sponsored by Bass Pro Shops or whatever, they're out there. If they're sponsored by Valvoline with Kyle Larson, so he's probably one of those deals. He's throwing out the first pitch of the Royals game. But all these events that you have every single week, it's got to be confusing.
Man, it's one of those things where I don't feel like we give enough credit. Like, we look at professional athletes and it's like, oh, I wish I could, right? I wish I could be a professional basketball player, professional football player, a NASCAR driver, whatever it is. But a lot of us don't comprehend what they have to do beyond what they do on the court or on the field or on the track, the sponsorship things, flying across the countries for different promotions and events and things that they have to do to try to drum up business and support and interest in what it is that they do, right? I mean, they're professional athletes. They're also salesmen in a lot of respects as well, because they have to sell their sport and sell their talent to people, whether that be people that are they're trying to pick up sponsorships for or a commercial for, or it's just people that they're, hey, come, please come.
First interview after every race, they put all the different hats on. Yeah,
please
like
come watch the event.
Gatorade,
please,
like
you know,
to thank
turn it on your television set, buy a ticket and come to the Speedway or come to Kauffman or Arrowhead. They have got to sell themselves in a lot of different ways. It's not just about trying to make a left turn at 200 miles an hour, which is damn near impossible in and of itself.
Yeah, and all on top of that, somebody mentions that I am going to ask Kyle about this. He's doing the double again this year. He's trying to do the Indy 500, then right afterwards fly to Charlotte to do the Coke 600. So he's going to...
Last year was his first one doing that, wasn't it?
Well, he was going to, but then the race got postponed because of the rain in Charlotte. But he's going to try to drive 1,100 miles in one single day. So that's going to be a lot of fun having Kyle on. Bink, appreciate you for getting him on, too. It's going to be...
Do you ever wonder how they pee when they're in the car?
I mean, that
they don't get out. So,
yeah, I mean, I think they
let it flow.
I think there's a way that they can relieve themselves. Yeah,
I'm sure there is.
I'm sure that there is something designed in that fire suit.
See, I'm pretty curious about that, actually.
Well, you mentioned, you know, so we can, again, we'll get to Kyle at 11. The Royals are hot. Of course, they're playing the White Sox. Bink, you've got a text.
The booty call, baby. That's exactly what they are. And if you don't look at the White Sox like a booty call, you're doing all wrong. I know a texter yesterday was very upset. Very upset that the word booty call was used. I've used it several times, not just lately. They were texting Carrington yesterday afternoon. They were texting Dusty and Bob. Some dude had his kid in the car. Have you ever listened to our drops at the station? Do you ever listen to the innuendos? Have you ever listened to the boner commercials our dudes do? But yet, when I say booty call, it offends you? Well, that's what they are. The Royals clinched their fifth consecutive series, longest streak of wins in 8 years, since June 9th to 27, 2017, when they won five straight. They have a franchise record 9 consecutive wins versus the White Sox, and a franchise 10 straight games against them at Kauffman Stadium. As I mentioned, and Carrington brought up, we've had two NFL drafts since the White Sox beat the Royals. That is the ultimate. Hey, when you're in the playoffs by a game over Seattle last year, it matters hammering the White Sox like it does. But they have had total. The Royals didn't play that well last night. I mean, pitching wise, yes, but they haven't been hitting the ball well. And I think the White Sox are pitching better this year. Clearly, they are. But man, watching the Royals and White Sox. You wait for that meltdown. I waited for that meltdown last night. It didn't matter. They actually were doing reverse of that when they were coming back at the end of the game, which was surprising.
Yeah, Carlos Estevez, he was doing his best to try to give up the game last night, and thankfully he was able to hold it down just enough to come out with the win. But and I saw a lot of people last night. I heard it yesterday during Vern's post-game show. I've seen it on social media last night and this morning. People complaining about the way in which the Royals won last night and the way in which they've won the first three games of this series. Can we shut up for a minute? Like, we're complaining about the way a team wins? Are we serious? A W is a W, and L's an L. Guess what? If you have more W's than L's, you probably make the postseason.
And in 5 years, when they look back at it, they're not going to care how it was done.
I don't care.
Look at W's and L's, like you said.
I don't care how the Royals have won these three games against the Chicago White Sox. Do you know what I do care about? That they've won the first three games of this four-game set against the White Sox, and they get an opportunity to go for a sweep tonight and get to 7 games above 500 before we hit the second week of May. That's what matters to me, and that's what should matter to everybody else as well. You can complain about the way in which they won tonight, or last night. Guess what? The pitching nails again. Michael Wacha, 7 scoreless last night. He was unbelievable. Bobby Witt, 2-run bomb. Mikel Garcia, another 2-hit game. And you remember all those people that were complaining about Vinny Pasquantino? I've seen it this week on this show. I've seen people text in and be like, should they consider calling up Jack Caglione and putting him at first base?
Which, if he did this in June or July, you wouldn't have cared.
Yeah, I'm not sure that Vinny's the guy anymore. On April 29th, Vinny Pasquantino was hitting 174 after an 0-for-4 game against the Tampa Bay Rays. Now it's May 8th, and he's hitting 210. After another 2-hit game yesterday, he has got hits in 4 of his last 5 games, including 2 2-hit games and a 3-hit game. We need to relax a minute. A W's a W, an L's an L. And right now, the Royals are getting a hell of a lot more W's than they are L's. Somebody in the text line just said it. You would much rather win ugly than lose pretty.
That's right. That's right. 5 consecutive series wins, though. That's the important thing. Go out and win series, they say. Whether you sweep them or 2 out of 3, whatever. But they've been rolling. They have the best record in baseball since the 20th. They send MJ down. This team's been on a roll ever since. People feel more comfortable being on this team. Vinny is a matter of time. We said it, man. It's a matter of time. This guy's a hitter. This guy's a true hitter. This guy's a proven hitter. This guy's a proven 97 RBI guy last year before he got hurt. It's going to happen. You know what? This makes – Bobby's already great. But when you have that kind of protection behind him, it gets even better for Bobby when Vinny starts to hit. It's a good thing. But people will complain. I do want to talk about this later because I was curious about this because I heard, you know, Dusty and Bob talking about Vern's show, you know, the text he was getting and people complaining because they were. And social media was a dumpster fire, as usual, 2 nights ago when the Royals weren't doing well against the White Sox. And then they kind of came back. Well, they did. They came back and won the 9th inning. And then everybody loved them again. It's like you hate him, then you love him. And Estevez could do no wrong, and then all of a sudden, last night, he does wrong. It's how are they, and we'll talk about it later, but I'm curious how people are going to do with the Chiefs. Like, if the Chiefs aren't making the AFC title game or the Super Bowl, because it's all you've done in the last 7 years, how are you going to handle it? Because it still could be a damn good team. They just got beat by another damn good team that's, oh, by the way, paid on scholarship as well. Not scholarship, you know what I'm talking about, but paid professional athletes. It can't happen. It hasn't happened lately, but are you getting too spoiled? Are you getting too spoiled? I mean, let's not forget these Royals, you know, lost 100 games, 106 games a couple years ago. Yes, they made the playoffs last year. Much better taking these wins than the losses.
You've won 14 of your last 16 games. Who cares how you won 14 of your last 16 games? as long as you're getting it done, right? This is a Royals team that 3 weeks ago, everybody was beeping and moaning about because they were 8-14. They were off to a slow start. MJ Melendez can't hit. Hunter Renfro can't hit. This, that, and the other. Vinny's off to a slow start. The pitching is eh. Everybody other than Bobby was hitting the ball well, or was hitting the ball poorly. And now you've won 14-16. You're staring down the barrel of a sweep, and you get to host the Boston Red Sox for 3 games Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Good old Richard Fitz comes in and pitches against the Royals.
You've done everything right since April 20th. You were the best team in baseball since April 20th. This Royals team collectively is hitting up over 275 since April 20th. The pitching it's the best pitching staff in Major League Baseball probably to begin this year.
Probably the best we've ever seen in Kansas City.
Yes.
At this point.
They're unbelievable.
But keep in mind, two out of the top four. You had two starters in the All-Star game that were Royals.
Right.
You had two of the top four in the Cy Young. When have you ever had that happen? And all these shutouts, I thought it was going to be another shutout last night, to be honest with you. I was like, oh my, this team is just rolling on getting shutouts. Something we haven't seen before, but they're just killing it with the shutouts.
They are. And Estevez,
Didn't get one last night.
And you've sort of seen him lately, I guess, having a little bit more trouble. Not entirely. He gave up 3 earned runs against the Colorado Rockies on April 22nd. This is only the third game in which he's pitched this year that he's given up an earned run. And he still picked up his 11th save of the year, and he's only got 2 blown saves. So he's been pretty outstanding. He's got a 2.65 ERA. What makes this Royals team, the pitching-wise, more special than maybe a year ago? You mentioned that Reagans and Lugo were both Cy Young finalists. Yes, but Chris Bubich is incredible to begin this year. Michael Wacha just threw another gem yesterday, 7 scoreless innings. Those two have probably been the 2 best pitchers on the staff so far. Michael Lorenzen is doing his job. He's got a sub-4 ERA. And then the bullpen this year compared to this time last year, night and day difference. Lucas Ersig, outstanding. Carlos Estevez doing his job pretty admirably, although he did absolutely struggle last night.
Well, put it this way about Wacha. He's now allowed, since the start of last season, he's allowed 3 earned runs or fewer, right, in 32 of 37 starts.
Pretty good.
3 runs or fewer, 32 of 37 starts, matching with the guy that won the Cy Young, Tarik Skubal.
Wow.
That is some high company for Michael Wacha that kind of gets under-talked about between Cole Reagans and Seth Lugo, of course, but yes. He's that good.
Yeah, he's only given up 1 such game this year where he gave up more than 3 earned runs, and that was that April 5th game against the Orioles, and that was one that the Royals got smoked the entirety of that game, but gave up 1 earned run against Cleveland, 2 against Minnesota, gave up 3 in 5 2/3 against New York, and has now pitched scoreless performances in 2 of his last 3 games. He threw 6 scoreless innings against the Astros on the 26th of April and threw 7 scoreless innings last night. The craziest part, dude had like 84 pitches. In 7 innings of work, he only had 84 pitches. I know that we don't see guys throw complete games anymore, but Michael Wacha quite literally could have possibly thrown a complete game last night, going 7 scoreless innings while only throwing 84 pitches. He had complete and total command of everything in his arsenal last night.
Obviously, we know how bad the White Sox were last year, historically bad, but this dropped the White Sox, America's booty call, to 10-27 to match the 2018 White Sox for their 2nd worst start through 37 games in franchise history. That's how bad they're parlaying last season for the White
second
Sox.
Second worst start from
and
last
what I call
start?
Them is what I call them because that's what it is, man. It's a given. When you play the White Sox, it's a given. They're a feel-good story. Got the Royals rolling last year, off to kind of a rocky start. Go play the White Sox, sweep them, go on a 7-game winning streak. It is what it is. If I want to say the word, it's a booty call, it's because it is. It's a given.
The crazy part is
the White Sox suck.
As bad as the Chicago White Sox are, they're actually 3 games up on the Colorado Rockies for the worst record in baseball.
For now, until the 4th of July.
The Rockies are 6-29. Woof.
4th of July weekend, brother.
The Rockies have given up 203 earned runs this year, which somehow isn't even the worst in Major League Baseball. The Washington Nationals, Miami Marlins have each given up even more earned runs than that. And man, I cannot help but continue to look at the Baltimore Orioles, and I'm just wondering what is going on. Like, what has gone so catastrophically wrong with the Baltimore Orioles?
Pitching. It's a team that started feeling themselves because they started to get good. So they get talked about. They couldn't parlay it. It's one thing about the Chiefs. Like, you parlay success into another year's success. It's tough to do in professional sports because we've seen so many teams win and then fall off the map. We've seen it lately with the NFL. Buccaneers beat the Chiefs in the Super Bowl, fell off the next year.
We can blame the pitching,
the Rams,
yes.
Fell off.
But they can't hit either. Fun fact for everybody. Would you like to know who the Baltimore Orioles leader in batting average is?
Jackson Holliday?
It is not. It is former Royals legend. Oh, I say that strong, like, you know, very, 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 you know, facetiously. Ryan O'Hearn, yes, is hitting .304 for the Baltimore Orioles right now.
272, something like that, or he was.
He's got 7 bombs and 14 RBIs to begin the year and 92 ABs. So, yeah, Ryan O'Hearn is the team's leader in batting average. Ramon Urias is hitting .292. But, I mean, look at this. Jackson Holliday's hitting .263. Gunnar Henderson's hitting .252. Cedric Mullins is hitting .237. Adley Rutschman's hitting .212. Ryan Mountcastle is hitting .205.
He was picked number one the year Bobby was picked by the Royals.
Correct.
That's the same year they got Gunnar, too. They got him in the second round. That was a hell of a draft.
It was.
For the Orioles.
And those two guys, as good as they were last year, you thought they were going to take massive leaps forward. And I know that he's struggling in Toronto right now, but I think that we have kind of undersold the loss of Anthony Santander to this Orioles lineup because his power bat isn't there to kind of protect some of those other guys in the order. And I think
almost
that
the guy
causing,
that was here,
it's causing some turmoil. I know I was a very strong Anthony Santander advocate. In fact, the first time that I came in and co-hosted for CDOT on the drive, Rob and I had a lengthy conversation about how I was hoping that the Royals would make a run on a guy like Anthony Santander. And I'm like, hey, come on. Like, I would love to see a power bat like that in to protect Vinny and Bobby and Salvi. The show ends. This was right after he had signed with Toronto. And right as the show was ending was when Ken Rosenthal came out with the article saying that the Royals had offered him
Ken
a deal.
Bomb.
But they just couldn't. They couldn't compete with what Toronto was offering him. And I'm like, oh, dude, you got to be kidding me.
Another thing, Logan, I don't know if you saw this. Drew and I were talking about this morning. It's in the NFL world, right? It's the Rams are taking a trip to Maui. You might say, oh, big deal. Who cares? The Rams are going over to Maui. I saw this, saw some other people from Kansas City talking about this. See some people talking about it nationally. Like, why would the Rams take a mini camp and go to Maui, right? And I start thinking, is this a new wave? Because I thought it was interesting. I started looking up the Rams because they are going to Maui. Mm-hmm. And like Hawaii Tourism's paying for some. It's like, that's incredibly expensive. Because you're taking a ton of guys. The training camp roster is 90, right? You're taking all the – those are some – well, it would take one jumbo jet to take it. But it has taken a lot of personnel over to Hawaii and all your equipment. And I started thinking, all right, first of all, it's a waste of money. But then I thought, I don't know, man. Is this the way the NFL's going? Like, I saw it this year, and I started looking up. That's the Rams' actual mandatory mini camp during that period they're going to be in Hawaii. And I started thinking about it. I was like, okay – you know they're just going to be loading that place up. Mandatory mini camps are not where fans get to go to.
No.
You get to go to training camp and all that, and you'll see on the news, you'll see, well, the news sportscasters, they get to show the guy stretching usually or in shells or something. They don't actually get to see when there's full 11-on-11.
Right.
But to invite fans to a mini camp, to me, is interesting because they'll sell tickets for this and everything else, and it'll be a big deal. And I thought, this might actually be genius. You'll actually probably start seeing other teams do this. It's a way to get your product. It's the NFL, once again, thinking outside the box. Again, this is just the Rams doing this. But it could be very beneficial for them, especially, you know, getting that Hawaii market to like the Rams. I understand why they're doing it, and these guys will get the free trip. There's a couple things that go with it. When you're in the undrafted free agent world, that's when you have to make the calls, hey, will you come play for us? Because being an undrafted free agent, sometimes better. It's actually better than being a seventh-round pick, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
The money's oftentimes better. Also, you can choose which team you're going to. And it's a race at the end. Andy Reid had to get on the phone and call Brenning Stuhl, the tight end from Clemson. Mm-hmm. Like, rarely does the head coach get on and call a guy to be an undrafted free agent. But he did. He knew it mattered. He knew he needed to do that. John Schneider and the Seahawks back when they were rolling everything and be Legion of Zoom, Boom, and all that, they were sending out brochures of why you should come play for the Seahawks to undrafted free agents. It's important. But if you can guarantee, you know, a nice little trip to Hawaii and everything else, hey, you might get cut or whatever, but you get a hell of a trip to Hawaii going forward. But I can see NFL teams doing this style. When I saw that, I was like, I just kind of poo-pooed it. But then I was like, started thinking about it. I was like, this is pretty creative, actually.
Well, it's not the exact same thing. I feel like it plays off of what we see organizations do in other sports, right? Major League Baseball, they go down to the South. They go to Arizona. They go to Florida. They go to Carolina for spring training, and they do all those things, right? They go down nice weather, all these different places to try to drum up support. Fans can go down there, watch the games, all those sorts of things, right? In the NBA, you'll hear about teams taking like international trips, right? The Chicago Bulls used to do it all the time in the 90s with Jordan and those great teams that they had, is they would go to Europe or they would go to Asia and they would take their teams over there, not only to, you know, give them a great trip and a great experience, but also because it increased the popularity of their sport and it drew attention to it. And if we know anything, it's about, you know, Hawaii and American Samoa and places like that have become much more invested in the game of football. I mean, we've seen outstanding players in the last 25, 30 years in the NFL come from those cultures that maybe weren't coming previously, right? Troy Polamalu and Penei Sewell, and the list goes on and on and on with those sorts of guys. And so to go to a place like Hawaii and increase the support of your organization, I mean, right? I mean, the Los Angeles Rams, you got a guy like Puka Nacua within your organization, a guy who comes from a Polynesian background. It makes so much sense. And you're right.
I can see the team doing this.
It's a great trip for your guys. And I'm trying to picture, like, where are the Chiefs going? Like, where would the Chiefs go? Yeah.
Well, my big thing is, since they're going to go to 18 games. And now teams, all the international games, we're expanding that now. Brazil, you'll see them in Ireland now, in Spain and all this, right? Mm-hmm. It was to put them on college campuses. Take one game a year and make it like the NHL stadium series and have them there. But it's another topic for another day. The other things, I want to see a training camp, because they let the teams that are playing first, like in Canton, and if you're playing a Thursday night game, you can start training camp a week before the others. But I always wanted to see like a Midnight Madness type thing with training camp at NFL Network. I like, you know, doing the, because fans, I think, would go up and tailgate it and go to that kind of thing. So that's something that I would actually like to see.
They don't do training camp anywhere else at other places. Like, the Chiefs are one of the few teams, if not the only team, that goes.
No, they're one of the few. There's like a handful now, like four or five.
I think that idea, as great as it sounds, and I think all of us can agree that it sounds cool.
Well, you can still do it. It doesn't matter where you're doing. You can still do it at the complex. You can still do it in Cincinnati, where the guys have to walk across a real road to practice.
Yeah, but you're not going to tailgate on a real road. You know, it just kills the vibe, where I think this is like, it almost serves as a training camp, where you're actually going somewhere. It's like a team camaraderie thing. Like, as much as it is to build up the NFL brand, it's let's go take a trip. Let's have some fun. Let's get to know each other a little bit more in a place that's different, that's cool. It's Hawaii, so a lot of people probably haven't been there in the first place. You know, being able to go and visit a place that not too many people have been, it's gorgeous. You know, it makes sense for you to do that. And I feel like the Chiefs have St. Joe. That is their, I know that it sounds a lot worse than Hawaii, but it's their camaraderie trip. Like that's what it is. Like, teams have training camp in the same cities that, like, they go and they sleep in their own bed. They don't have to worry about any of the
other
stuff.
I get it. There's a couple things too. And also with the NFL, when they go to 18 games, Drew, they're going to shorten preseason from 3 to 2, right? You know, that's going to happen.
Yeah.
And the Chiefs won't do the practice with another team. They don't like to do that. They practice against themselves. But I thought, if the NFL mandated you had to scrimmage with another team, that could take place instead of a preseason game, I think the teams would get more value from that. It'd be something kind of fun.
I think that'll
fun.
Happen a lot more.
We come back. The text line was going nuts last night, so it made me think, what would people do if the Chiefs started to do a slide? People lose their minds? We'll talk about that next. Welcome back, Cody and Golden. But it's Jay Binkley, Logan Weber, Drew Nixon with you now. Kyle Larson, NASCAR driver Kyle Larson, of course, Kansas Speedway in action this week, and he's throwing out the first pitch at a Kauffman Stadium today. The Royals, an afternoon game against the lowly Chicago White Sox. We'll talk to Kyle about 11. You heading to the K today in between your
Not today. I'll be going on Sunday, though.
Are you?
Yeah, for Mother's Day. My wife and I are going to be taking my father-in-law, my mother-in-law.
What a gift.
And
what a gift.
How about that?
My brother and sister-in-law, my niece and nephew. So, yeah.
That's awesome.
We're going to have a whole group going out to Kauffman on Sunday to take in Royals Red Sox, which is an interesting one for me because I actually grew up a Red Sox fan, but have slowly since I've moved away from that growing up in Kansas City. And of course, you know, I was a Red Sox fan because Dustin Pedroia played there, and once his career kind of derailed itself, I stopped rooting for the Red Sox. I do.
You got a Boston lean.
My wife
is from that area.
Did you have a tough night last night?
Huh?
You and Mac both.
Drew,
Logan,
I'm not okay.
I got to mention it because Mac was going through it this morning.
Mac was having a hard time with it.
I'm not doing okay.
I was thinking about you because Mac like lives and dies by the Celtics. And I was like, what about Logan? He's going to be struggling too.
100 threes attempted in two games.
It's sweet.
And you've made 25 of them.
Most through two games, yeah. The funniest thing was after the game, Joe Mazzulla was like, I mean, we got some good looks. We just got to execute a little bit better. So there was no thought process in, hey, I told the guys they need to get to the rim a little bit more.
No, because that's not his style. I mean, his philosophy is
live and die by
chuck
the three.
And duck, man. It is live by the three, die by the three. What I don't understand, I'm just going to get on my soapbox for a minute. Kristaps Porzingis averaged 18-9 this season. Why is he only playing 14 minutes against the Knicks? Why is he only... Al Horford. I love Al Horford. I love this man. Why is Al Horford playing twice as many minutes in an Eastern Conference semifinal as Kristaps Porzingis? He's healthy. Play the man.
I agree.
You're killing me, Joe. Listen.
This series is going to
seven. Got him a ring last year.
You know
I love it.
It's going seven.
My boy, you have got to stop. I like Peyton Pritchard. I don't need that man throwing up 9 threes a game. Not right now. Not right now. Get to the rack. Draw fouls. Shoot layups.
Look, they haven't even been able to get a shot off in the last two possessions of those games.
No.
In game one and two, they couldn't even get a shot off.
No, I mean, Mikal Bridges has just become the greatest defender with less than 10 seconds to go in a game ever.
Well, Bob has been rooting for the Knicks, and of course, Mac with the Celtics made an interesting,
they've been having an interesting dynamic there
in the morning
show. I promise I'm not a Knicks fan. However, if the Pacers do end up beating Cleveland and the Celtics come back to win the series, Logan.
I was a Kansas City Kings fan.
So are you a Sacramento Kings fan?
It's old. No, I dropped them a bad habit when they moved to Sacramento. My free agency was clear at that point.
So you have a take, Bink, regarding people or fans who...
They're mad.
I think you're a little bit worried what the reaction will be when the Chiefs...
Yeah.
We don't know when it's going to be.
What's going to happen?
Inevitably, they're going to lose a game in the divisional round or in the
wild
card round. What are you worried for people? Well,
it just... You hear it. You know, Vern's post-game show, people like to call in, upset, they'll lose a game. They don't care. They've won 5 straight series. That doesn't matter to people. It doesn't matter they're winning. They're beating professional teams. They just want to complain. And you get spoiled at a point. Do we forget how long it was in this town where teams were bad? Do we forget that the area between Kauffman and Arrowhead was the Boulevard of Broken Dreams? Do we forget that gap between 85 and 2015 with the Royals? Do we forget the fact the Chiefs had made one AFC title game since Lynn Dawson days.
Yeah.
When I wasn't even alive when they won that Super Bowl. And I'm old. And 93 season, 94 AFC title game in Buffalo. Do we forget what an honor it was to get there? They've had 7 straight AFC title games and probably could have hosted all of them too. Of course, that one 2 years ago was in Baltimore because of Kadarius Mondesi Tony dropping footballs in 2 games. It cost the Chiefs home field advantage because they would have had it over the Ravens because they had a better AFC record. So that game would have been playing here without Kadarius Dropius Tony on this team. It would have been here. But 7 straight AFC title games. I know from doing the Chiefs post game since I got here 2012 and seeing the text rolling through the game. After the game, people are pissed. I've got a lot of fire Andy Reid's, Logan. And I'm like, okay, well, tell me who you want then.
You can't pay attention to those, though.
No, I can't, tell me who's better. I said, tell me another 5 or 10 you'd get.
That's
tell me.
All I heard after Super Bowl Sunday. I was doing post-game after the Chiefs-Eagles Super Bowl.
Yeah.
and the really? Number of do we need to reevaluate Brett
Veach? Do we need
Veach?
To reevaluate?
Do we, yeah. we need to fire Matt Nagy? We need to do this. We
a GM
need to do
that's
that.
Gone to 5 Super Bowls and won 3. Do we need to reevaluate
really,
the decision?
Really, folks, you just broke the franchise record for single season wins, and you got to a third straight Super Bowl after winning the first two. What in the world are you possibly complaining about right now? I mean,
well, and also this too, Bill Belichick holds the record for postseason wins with 31. Andy Reid's number 2 with 28. So you want to fire that guy? You want to fire that guy? Because the people will melt down. Like, if they don't make the AFC title game, we'll say they just win one playoff game, right? And lose the next round. You don't have the AFC title game here. I mean, Super Bowls have Super Bowl parties. It used to suck, man, with Tom Brady and them all the time. I mean, still get together with everybody and watch them because it's the Super Bowl and you'd watch the big game, right? Get excited about it. But it's much different with the Chiefs. The Chiefs have become we do. It's become a holiday tradition. It's become a family tradition. Who's bringing the what? It's yeah. these the calls and the texts to go around the family group members, all right? Let's get together for the game and watch it. It's become the fiber of what this town is all about.
100%.
What are you going to do if you don't get there? If these texts that keep coming in. You know, I heard Bob and Dusty talking about it with the text to Vern. I looked at the text line. I was like, whoa, Vern has to deal with that. And what are they going to do with the Chiefs? Because I've seen it, and people do melt down, and then they change their tune. Because then the Chiefs come back and win.
Right.
Like the whole game, it'd be like, oh, they suck. Reed sucks. Mahomes, all this, blah, 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 blah. And then they'd win the game. And then it's kind of like, okay, now what? Now what's your complaint? Now what are you going to complain about now that they actually won the game?
It's just one of those things. There's something that, there's a saying out there about being blind and rich. That's kind of what it feels like with some, right? And I'm not saying that that's everybody. In fact, it may not even be the majority of people, right? This feels like a potential case of a silent majority and a vocal minority in this case, where the people who are the most wrong are often the loudest. I cannot believe that's the case, right? This in Kansas City, it's been unbelievable over the last 10 years, watching 12 years, that's watching what's happened here in Kansas City. From the 14 World Series run to the 15 World Series victory to what has occurred with the Kansas City Chiefs since Andy Reid and Brett Veach arrived, right? Making the playoffs and winning the AFC West year after year. Even when it was, even before Mahomes arrived, right? And then Mahomes gets here, and all of a sudden, it's not just about winning the division. It's AFC championship games for 7 consecutive years. It's getting to a Super Bowl 5 times. It's whenever the smallest, most minute sort of thing goes wrong, all of a sudden, everybody believes the sky is falling.
And the national media, too, because they won't pick the Chiefs as all the Chargers picks for the division. When the Chiefs have gone to the AFC title game, beat them. Beat them.
Yeah.
Yeah, they win 15 games. Yes, they got rolled in the Super Bowl of the Eagles, but you know what? They still win. They're still AFC champions. Beat them.
I definitely think it's some of the frustration stems from the we've seen them win it and be in the game all of these times where they don't. Sometimes fans might not know how good they have it until they don't have it anymore. Somebody on the text line said they were a Cardinals fan. They're a Cardinals fan, and from 2000 to 2015, it was, you know, NLCS or bust, and now it's really tough because, you know, they aren't able to make those runs anymore. And then you look back and say, man, we had it really good at that time, where the fact that Chiefs fans are in it the way that they are and able to enjoy every single season as a divisional win, as a AFC title game appearance, as a Super Bowl appearance, like it's, you expect it so much that if you don't even get there, you lose in the game. It's very disappointing. But 15 years, 20 years down the line, or post Patrick Mahomes playing career, however long he continues to play at this rate, because he's going to play for at least another 10, you would think, maybe 15.
He's one of those guys that's cut differently. You got to pull him off the field.
I think people will look back and be like, man, we had it really good at this time, because at some point the dynasty's just not going to be there anymore. That's just the way that it's going to go. And I think that that's where fans, not that they get blinded to your point,
right,
by how good they are, but I think that's a good way to phrase it, where they don't really realize how good the Chiefs actually have it right now, how good the fan base has it right now compared to that of other teams like the Cowboys fans.
And how difficult it is doing every
those
year.
Wins.
Yeah.
People who are like the Patriots fans and the Cardinals fans and all those
Cowboys
other fans
are still holding on to that 30 years later. Yeah. I got a couple of points. One, I think that I think that a lot of Chiefs and even some Royals fans now, based off what's happened here in the Metro and the amount of winning that's been done over the last, you know, 7, 8 years, 10 years for the Chiefs, and the last couple of years, you know, with the 14 and 15 runs, and then this last year and this year sandwiched in between some really bad years for the Royals, is I think that there are Chiefs fans out there who have seemingly forgotten, or maybe they are deliberately trying to forget what it was like before.
21 years without winning a playoff game. People that were born were legally drinking in a bar, Logan, in the meantime that they hadn't won a playoff game.
That was me. Not quite, but pretty damn close.
I was going to graduation, sitting there going, he's never seen a playoff win.
Yeah, I it's one of those things. I think that whether it's deliberate or inadvertent, you're forgetting about the Brody Croyle years. You're forgetting about Elvis Gerback. You're forgetting about, you know, moving on from Rich Gannon for whoever, drafting Blackledge in the first round, right? We're forgetting about what it was to be a Chiefs fan between Lynn Dawson and Patrick Mahomes. And some of that for good reason, right? For good reason. The second thing I have is somebody said this in the text line, and I want to revise it a little bit. The person in the text line said, it's like having a straight A student and they get a C on a test. I think it's a little bit different than that. With this Chiefs team, and like this year, right, going 15-2, getting to a third straight Super Bowl after winning two straight, and you get blown out by the Eagles, because that's what it was. They got blown out, embarrassed. It reminds me of like when you're in high school and you've got a friend, you got that buddy of yours, you know, that girl in your friend group who is a tremendous student, right? She's like trying to, he or she's trying to get valedictorian. They got 109% in the class or whatever. You take a test and everybody's going around the group, right? And they're like, oh, what'd you get on your math test? And somebody's like, oh, I got a 91, I got an 86, I got an 84, I got an 88. And they get to this person and they're sitting there in the back of the room and they're shaking their head and they're furious. And you're like, why? What happened? Did you get a bad grade? And they're like, oh, I got a 97. I'm so mad. I want to punch you in the mouth right now. Like, that's what some of these Chiefs fans sound like at the moment. Like, you got to somewhere nobody's ever been before and you're still complaining.
It's amazing. It's like your panties getting in a wad. People like to complain about everything, and they do. And the one thing is that people don't realize is just how damn difficult it is to do what Andy Reid does each and every year. He doesn't sniff Coach of the Year, right? He's not even mentioned. Kevin Stefanski has won it twice. Andy Reid has won it once. Once in his career, he won it in Philadelphia. One time. Belichick's actually won like three. Stefanski's won it twice. Matt Nagy has been Coach of the Year as many times as Andy Reid. Doug Peterson, same thing. But Andy Reid's number two all-time in postseason wins. Fourth all-time in actual NFL wins. To be good every year is tougher than having a crap season, and that's what teams do. You have a crap season, all of a sudden you're good, right? You win 10 games, oh, you're Coach of the Year. Because you turned this team around, it was so bad. Then to be good every single year, to have a bullseye on your back every single year, to be the team that every team goes and game plans and beats, that is tougher than sucking and then being good. But that's evidently what we do in society is making Coach of the Year, is you do that. Brett Veach, Super Bowl 57, parade, holds up Lombardi, says this is what a rebuild looks like.
Yeah.
Because he was rebuilding the team. He had Najee Johnson that seventh round, Jalen Watson in the seventh round, Isaiah Pacheco in the seventh round, and they were contributing to the Chiefs playing football. They weren't slowing down. Like some of these teams, the Buccaneers win the Super Bowl, then they go in the back of the milk carton. Rams win the Super Bowl, they don't parlay it. We've seen so many teams win a Super Bowl and not be good. We've seen the Bengals. Oh, they're taking steps. They actually went to the Super Bowl. They didn't make the damn playoffs last year.
Yeah.
But they continue to do it every year and make the AFC title game 7 years. When all of a sudden you don't make it, people want to get mad and they want to complain because their expectations are out of whack. They're out of whack. They become Kansas basketball fans.
Ooh.
It's what they've done. Not in the Final Four. Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. We don't care. But doing what they're doing is impossible. It's more than any other team in any other sport can say to be that good consistently every year and not have the downfall means you're doing it in the front office, you're doing it with the coaching staff, and you're doing it with the players. Number 15. I don't care. It's got a text. Mahomes number 4 in the power rankings for players. I don't care. And last year when they did the NFL top 100 vote, the players, they voted in like November. Remember, he was not great around Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
But then turned around and he actually went out and won a Super Bowl, which is the end-all be-all, actually winning the Super Bowl. Very cool when you actually win Super Bowl rings or talk about them like Joe Burrow and Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson. They can sit around at that little loser table and talk about what it would be like to win a Super Bowl. But to be good every single year, you're going to melt down, or do you understand, man, sometimes you're just not the best? Because that's what happens in the NFL. And we're lucky to have what's going on with the Chiefs. Damn lucky what's happening with the Royals at this point as well.
Yeah, it's, I don't know. I'm sitting here looking at this list of NFL coaches of the year. This might be the most useless. This might be the most meaningless, useless award in the history of football. Like you said, Andy Reid's only won the award once. Kevin Stefanski's won it twice. Never won a Super Bowl. Ron Rivera's won it twice. Never won a Super Bowl. Bruce Arians has won it twice. Never won a Super Bowl.
He did once.
I guess he did win one. Dan Reeves has won it twice. Never won a Super Bowl. Let's go down here even further. Chuck Knox. Chuck Knox won it three times.
Ground Chuck.
Never won a Super Bowl.
What? Way, people don't respect how tough it is to be good when you're the when you have the bulls on your back. They don't respect that. But it is tougher being good every year than having good years. Because Vandy Reed came out and he just won seven games. Guess what? He'd be the coach of the year the next year. That would happen. Because he'd get the team to the playoffs, all of a sudden he'd win coach of the year. Does that make him a better coach? Now, what makes him a better coach is doing it consistently every year when you have those expectations to keep on winning. And guess what? You keep on winning. The fact is, his bad year in Kansas City was 9-7. They were two games over 500. That's the one year he didn't make the playoffs in Kansas City, 2014. The one year he didn't make it. But he still finished two games over 500.
Yeah.
But that sky is falling. I'm curious how people react. I'm curious that their expectations are Super Bowl or bust every year.
For some, yes. That's where we have hit at this point.
Damn it, Drew, give me a relaxer.
Yeah, I was gonna say
some blue chew or something. I can't say that. Text on to get mad.
You need to relax. Like just relax a little bit. We got Kyle Larson coming on.
That'd be fun.
You gotta be locked in, Bink, when Kyle calls in, all right? You gotta be locked in.
I will be locked in. Give me some blue chew. Kyle Larson next.